Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 1st of October, 2012, and today we're joined on the line once again by our old friend, Professor Michel Chossadovsky of globalresearch.ca, all the way on the line from my home and native land of Canada. Professor Chossadovsky, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us again.
Delighted to be on the program.
All right. Well, tonight I wanted to start talking about a subject that is something that not a lot of people think of. It's not in the forefront of a lot of people's minds when we're talking about some of these events like warfare and the possibility of warfare in various parts of the globe. Something that not a lot of people have on their plate when it comes to that topic is the possibility of weather warfare and modification of the environment itself, climate, as a tool of warfare. And this is despite the fact that there's in fact a voluminous amount of detail that has been accrued over the years documenting the fact that weather warfare and climatic modification is very much a reality. So let's start talking about that. I know you've written about that extensively for globalresearch.ca. Perhaps we can talk about some of the documentation and some of the companies that are behind this climate modification agenda.
Well, first of all, I should mention that weather warfare is not something which is recent. It was used during the Vietnam War. Cloud seeding techniques, which were intended to block enemy supply lines. But in the course of the 1990s, it has become increasingly sophisticated. And I'm referring to the development, what is called the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, HAARP, which is based in Gokona, Alaska, which is a system of high frequency antennas directed to the outer atmosphere, and which then can be used to trigger climatic instability in different parts of the world, as well as disrupt communication systems. We talk about NMOD, environmental modification techniques for military use. Now, these techniques of climatic modification are, if we can trust military documents and statements of the U.S. Air Force, they are fully operational. But there's absolutely no evidence. There are suspicions, of course. There's no evidence that these techniques have actually been applied. It's very difficult to actually test whether, you know, the activity of HAARP has led to particular climatic occurrences. But what is important to point out in the current context is that the United States, as well as Russia, have these capabilities, but particularly the United States in relation to HAARP, and they have acknowledged that they intend to use these technologies of weather modification, which can trigger floods, hurricanes, droughts, earthquakes, against enemies, namely, in the present context, Syria, Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, okay? And they explicitly state that these weather modification techniques have both offensive as well as defensive applications and can be used for deterrence purposes. In other words, we are in presence of something which is very diabolical. I consider this to be the ultimate weapon of mass destruction. Why? Because it can destroy the agricultural system. It can destabilize the national ecology, the environment. It can disrupt communications networks. It can destabilize an entire national economy. And in the present context of asymmetrical warfare and the use of non-conventional weapon systems, which has been proposed, in fact, by the U.S. Administration, I would suspect that weather warfare is part of the agenda. Nobody talks about it. Unfortunately, scientists are absolutely mute on the subject. It is not part of the debate on climate change, although it is acknowledged that that these techniques do disrupt climate. Ultimately, the scientific debate on owning the weather for military use. I'm using the terms of the U.S. Air Force. Those are not my terms. The U.S. Air Force says we must own the weather. We must own the weather so that we can use the weather in the for military purposes against enemies of the United States and the Western world. So that is the background.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the documents that back this up and some of the technologies that are itself doing this. And in some of your writings, you go as far back as a U.S. mathematician, John von Neumann, who was writing about this as much as 70 years ago. So this is by no means a new concept and has been fleshed out in numerous documents, as you've been detailing. Why do you think it has been so much kept under wraps, and how are they able to maintain that level of secrecy over something that's been so out in the open for so long?
Well, I think there are two elements behind this. First of all, it's the nature of the weapon system itself. It is something which is covert in its application, so that it, when the HAARP antennas go into full swing and trigger a particular geopolitical area of the world, okay, or a particular country, nobody knows about it. It's reported as a flood, a drought. Nobody knows about it. And it is very difficult for even for scientists to establish a link between the activity of the HAARP system of antennas on the one hand and a climatic occurrence at the other end of the world. There have been suspicions, and there have been some very unusual patterns which have emerged. So it's the convert nature of this weapon system, and one assumes it is heavily integrated into covert operations and so on. It's not strictly a U.S. Air Force undertaking, and there's always the possibility of denials. Yes, we've been attacked by HAARP. Now, how do you prove it? But on the other hand, there have been very few scientists which have had the courage to investigate that relationship. It's a very complex relationship, namely the activity of the antennas and climatic occurrences. And the reason, as I mentioned earlier, the reason is that the scientific community is in fact more or less kidnapped by the military-industrial complex. It does not want to voice any statements which could, of course, have far-reaching implications at the political, geopolitical level. I should mention that one of the most distinguished scientists, Rosalie Bertel, who recently passed away, she brought out this relationship. But in a very cautious way. So scientists are mum on the subject matter. Environmentalists do not, although they acknowledge the existence of climatic warfare, they have never inserted that into their discussion on global warming or climatic instability. And I should mention that in effect, there was a convention signed between various countries, but specifically between Russia and China, going back to 1977, which it's a convention which bans the use of environmental modification techniques recognizes their destructive applications. And at the 1992 Earth Summit, there was a reassertion of that basic protocol of 77 in the founding documents of the United Nations Framework for Climate Change. but in effect, it was not really mentioned. And in all subsequent venues pertaining to climate change, Kyoto, global warming, the issue of environmental modification techniques for military use is never mentioned. Instead, the environmentalists acknowledge the existence of these military technologies, but they are more concerned with CO2 emissions and their impact on global warming. And consequently, the whole debate on climate change, in effect, is somewhat complicit of the military agenda.
Well, let's talk more about that military agenda and how that plays out with these technologies. And interestingly enough, even Yahoo News recently picked up on this idea on September 11th, actually. They ran a story, could Iran's enemies really be destroying its rain clouds? Noting that Iranian authorities have been talking for some months now about how outside forces are creating droughts in the country as a tool of warfare against them. And the article goes on to take the subject seriously and at least mulls it over before giving a type of whitewash answer that type of environmental modification couldn't happen at that level. I think we know better than that, but it at least gives the indication of what types of applications these technologies can have and how it can have a real effect on the population. Let's talk more about, assuming these technologies can affect very real climatic change, what ways can they be used? How can they really be employed as a tool of warfare?
Well, I don't want to speculate because I don't have any proof of the application of these technologies. But I think that we have to nonetheless address some very unusual weather occurrences, which go back to the 1990s. I've looked into some of the earlier weather occurrences. We know, for instance, that North Korea in the course of the 90s was affected by recurrent flooding and drought, which was, in a sense, very unusual. 220,000 people died as a result of the ensuing famine, according to Pyongyang's own figures. U.S. figures placed, in fact, the number of deaths at about 2 million. And that occurred in the early to mid-90s. It coincides with the development of the HAARP program. Is there a relationship? It has to be examined. It has to be addressed. But then you look at other countries which are, let's say, rogue states or enemies of America. Cuba. Cuba was affected in the course of the 90s and in recent years as well by significant droughts. And in fact, in the late 90s, rainfall in Cuba was at the lowest level since the early 1940s. Why? Again, it raises questions. I say this because, in effect, the U.S. military, first of all, says, yes, we're going to use these. They say it. They don't hide the intent. They say, we are going to use this. And they also say the advantage of this type of weapon system is that the enemy doesn't know that we're using it and that the broader public doesn't know that these weather occurrences emanate from a military agenda. So I think that that we have to question, of course, the basic premises of these weapon systems, because they say, yes, we're going to do it. We're going to create storms and earthquakes and so on. They say it in official Air Force documents. And of course, one would expect that when this HAARP program was developed, it was subject to routine testing. That's always the case for weapon systems. It was put together, I should mention, in its final stages by Raytheon in collaboration with British Aerospace Systems. So two of the most powerful so-called defense contractors. And they own the patents on this technology. I should mention that that the technology is based on the work of Serbian scientists, renowned Serbian scientist Nikola Tesla, whose inventions, of course, were stolen by U.S. corporations. So that we are dealing with something which is extremely sophisticated, which has an impact, a potential impact on the whole structure of planet Earth. You're interfering with its environmental modification, which affects the whole planet. And this has been recognized by scientists. And playing around with these weapons, deliberately modifying the world's ecosystem, is ultimately a weapon of mass destruction. But it's more than that. It has a bearing on humanity and ecology, broadly defined. So that, I think, has to be addressed. And I think scientists should commit themselves to bringing out this relationship. What I've done in my work is really to analyze military documents and statements by the U.S. military. I've looked at some of the scientific reports. I've looked at the way this HAARP project was put together, its various phases. I can say that it's fully operational because I'm basing that on official documents. I can say that they intend to use it because they say they intend to use it. But on the other hand, I don't see anybody in the scientific community addressing those issues. And I think that the scientists are aptly scared because this is a no-no. It's a taboo. You don't interfere. You know, you don't interfere into something which is so devastating in terms of consequences. But nonetheless, I think we have to address it. And I'm convinced that in the context of current war projects, the Pentagon has a military agenda today. The use of climatic warfare is on the agenda, but it's part of the covert agenda. It's not a battlefield type of object which you can see. It's not a jet fighter or a bomb or a nuclear bomb. It is a set of antennas so that the mechanism of manipulation of climate is something which we are not able to apprehend and trace its origin back to the U.S. Air Force and the HAARP project.
Well, as you say, the people who would be in a position to be able to connect those dots and make more definitive scientific statements about the evidence connecting any individual event to the HAARP project or any other type of covert project would be the scientists who would have the ability to analyze that type of data. But obviously, they're deeply tied in with the structure itself, receiving a lot of their funding from the government, etc. So there are a lot of economic and other interests in not speaking out about this type of thing. What can you say about the possibility that scientists will actually start to take this seriously or will actually start to speak up about this? And if not, what does that say about our ability as a civilization to combat these types of covert technologies?
Well, you see, I think that this is in some respects connected to the contradictory discourse on climate change, because the consensus is global warming. And the consensus, which is shared by scientists or the majority of scientists, although there's certain hiccups there in the scientific discourse, is that global warming is the greatest threat to humanity based on the frequency of CO2 emissions and so on, greenhouse gas emissions. There's a long-standing debate on that issue. But if you look at media coverage, and I'm talking about media disinformation, they will, at this particular juncture in our history, say global warming is a threat to humanity. They don't say global warfare is a threat to humanity. They don't address the fact that NATO has now become a worldwide killing machine. They don't address the issue of the dangers of nuclear war or nuclear energy for that matter, which are reasonably well documented. Those dangers are there. They say the danger is global warming. But by saying the danger is global warming, they are also implying that climate change is caused by a particular set of variables, okay? And so it becomes a strictly environmental discourse. And what we are saying is that climate can be changed deliberately as part of a strategic military geopolitical agenda, which consists in undermining the ecosystem of known enemy countries, North Korea, China, Russia, Cuba, Venezuela, and so on. Okay? And that issue has to be addressed because many of those climatic events are very unusual. They don't even correspond to the normal assumptions of climate change and global warming. And they occur in certain parts of the world and not in other parts of the world. But we are in an area of climatic instability. And this technology, HAARP technology, it has the ability of targeting weather changes, but it also produces global climatic instability. Its use creates global climatic instability. And that has been brought out by several authors, including the late Rosalie Bertel. We're not strictly dealing with innocuous for the world. If we target North Korea, does this affect climate in other parts of the world? Yes, it does, because it creates a disturbance in the global ecosystem, and consequently, to exclude the environmental modification techniques from the debate on climate change is in fact a mechanism to create fiction in a sense, because there's very little evidence, or at least there's questionable evidence that CO2 emissions have a bearing on climate change, or at least that they are the main factor for climate change. We can discuss that. But as far as environmental modification techniques, the evidence that these technologies trigger climate change is fairly well established. And we have military documents to support that assertion.
That's exactly right. And once again, for listeners out there, I would recommend all of the articles that you've posted on this subject over the years at globalresearch.ca, including such articles as Weather Warfare, Beware the U.S. Military's Experiments with Climactic Warfare, and Environmental Modification Techniques and Climate Change, and other resources as well. Professor Chosadovsky, any other final words you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I think that I would sincerely hope that this issue of environmental modification techniques reemerges as an area of debate within the climate summits. Okay? It has been mentioned in the European Parliament. In fact, there was a debate in the European Parliament. It has been mentioned by the Russian Duma. It is essential that it also be debated within the framework of climate change. But it should also be understood that at this juncture in our history, we, the United States of America and its allies, the Western world, is applying a formidable military machine, which is in part composed of unconventional weapon systems, environmental modification techniques are part of that arsenal. It's a weapon of mass destruction. It can be used covertly. And to deny its existence is to deny an understanding of the, is to deny an understanding on the nature of that military agenda and of the techniques it's using. Okay, it's using cyber warfare, it's using covert ops, it's using nuclear, possibly using nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons. Weather warfare, from my standpoint, is the most destructive weapon system currently available to the U.S. military. And consequently, it has to be, the issue has to be addressed, and the HAARP system has to be dismantled in accordance with the 1977 convention, which was signed by Russia at the time, the Soviet Union, and the United States, that these deadly weapon systems would not be used by any country and member nation of the United Nations.
All right, Professor Michel Jossadovsky, a very fascinating subject. Thank you for your time and your insights today.
Thank you very much.